Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, fight fans, and welcome to this issue of Knuckle Up on Sports Action Network Radio. It's your host, George Bowley. And as always, joining us shortly, sitting in my co-host, the editor at the MMA Corner and Scrap Fight Magazine, Mr. Josh Davis will be with us. We have a lot to discuss. The Magic Man, the notorious one, has done it. Done it again. Thanks for sitting in, brother. Whew. I think this is the biggest news, really, that's hit, I guess, this week. Conor McGregor gets his fight at 155. What other news are we hearing about this?
Well, you know, obviously Mystic Mac calling the shots, basically running the show, getting what he wants. And then the, you know, second half of this news that I don't know why is just not getting any play, but Holly Holm defending her title against Miesha Tate, which will be the co-main event of that card. So, no, I think it's big news. The one thing that I do want to make sure that everybody is clear about, this is not the first time that a champion has fought another champion for that champion's title, okay? So Conor McGregor is not the person to do it. BJ Penn was the first person to do it. BJ Penn was the lightweight champion when he moved up in weight class to fight GSP the second time for George's welterweight title, obviously. BJ got whooped, didn't win the fight, but he was the first and only fighter to this date to actually do that. Conor McGregor is not the first guy. Stop giving him props for it. It's not his. Those belong to BJ.
Look, no doubt about it. You know, but when BJ attempted this, he attempted this at a later part in his career, and BJ's rise wasn't as, you know, significant as Conor McGregor's was. You know what I mean? Conor McGregor is a guy who basically came out of left field in less than a year and a half, is an MMA superstar, multi-million dollar MMA superstar. You know, if I can just be honest, I said on this show, and I'll say it again, I thought there were some great fights for McGregor at 45 before he fought Jose to kind of just solidify his place. But to come in and be ranked number 7 and get a title shot, you know, he missed 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 ranked guys that he could have fought. But that was the game plan anyway. You know what I mean? I mean, before he fought Aldo, who did he really fight that you can say, oh, he whooped? You know, he beat a guy with a 2-week, you know, he beat a top 5 guy, but with only a 2-week training camp. You see what I mean? You can't really say Dustin Poirier was a stiff competition, or the German fighter. His name eludes me at this particular moment.
Seaver.
Yeah, Seaver. You know, that these were real guys. You know, I'm talking about the Uriah Fabers. I'm talking about the, you know, who else at 45 is a fighter I wanted to see? Frankie Edgar. These type of guys before you get to Jose. But he's done what he had to do. He did it, and I shut my mouth. You know, he's the champ, and he's doing his thing.
You know, he's right now he's the cream of the crop. He is changing the game for all fighters. And, you know, honestly, 10 years from now, we're going to look back, and a lot of people are going to be thanking Conor McGregor. Yes, people can hate him and say whatever they want about him, but the fact is he is changing the game. He is doing things that other fighters have been scared to do, and now he's paving the way to let them know that, hey, we hold the cards, not them. And that's a pretty big statement to make there. And, you know, he's no longer even dealing with Dana White. He's directly with Lorenzo Fertitta. And really the word that I get is, you know, Dana White is so far out of the Conor McGregor dealings that he doesn't even know what's going on and finds out after the media does.
Well, that's no surprise. You know, in John Jones' interview, he said the same thing. You know, he prefers to do business with Lorenzo. And I've heard that from a lot of, you know, top 10, top 5 fighters, money makers for the UFC, that they're really comfortable talking with Lorenzo and doing deals with Lorenzo as opposed to Dana. What has happened? What hasn't happened? What does that mean? You know, what has Dana White done throughout the years that have just rubbed these fighters wrong? Only they know, you know. But look, let's be honest. Lorenzo Lotito didn't leave a multi-million dollar or almost $1 billion at the time successful casino and restaurant business to come to the UFC and Zuffa if it wasn't for a purpose. You know, quiet is kept. Maybe the media does know that Dana White has burned a lot of bridges, a lot of people that didn't want to do business with UFC, or should I say Dana White. It was Lorenzo that had to go back and mend a lot of those relationships with networks and promoters and sponsors and everybody else. So, you know, in the light, they're shaking hands, and Dana White's the best thing since sliced bread, but behind closed doors, we're all starting to hear, even now from the fighters, something different.
Definitely, definitely. And right now, Conor is, Conor is the forefront of that. You know, and he's, again, a very vocal fighter, and he's made it very clear that he does what he wants. Then he sits down with Lorenzo, and yes, he is going to get a minimum of $10 million for his next fight. He is going to be fighting RDA for the lightweight title if he wins. He is going to be allowed to defend both belts. He is going to be essentially allowed to pick and choose who he thinks his next opponents are. So everybody else out there, whether you like Conor or you don't, take note, because this is the proper way to do business. This is the proper way to brand yourself. The guy came from nothing and is now worth, you know, literally $100 million in less than 2 years.
Yeah. You know, that's his buying power. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. You know, and you can't be mad about that, because that is, if I'm just being honest, that's the boxing model. That's the Mayweather. That's the Golden Boy model. That's the model where, you know, you're the brand, not the promotion company that's promoting you, you know. And they got to shut their mouth. He did what he said he wanted to do, and he's making them money. His biggest risk is now that he now has to sleep. You know, he's made his bed. Now he has to sleep in it. And wrong move, one slip, one loss. You know, and I'm not saying, you know, a good fight where the fight can go anyway. It was a drag-out fight. Man, that was great. I'm talking about a 13-second loss or something can really put him down on the negotiating table.
Well, and that loss is coming. Let's just be honest. It's the fight game. Someone's going to clip him. It's going to happen. He's not unbeatable, unbreakable. No one is. So it's going to happen. Just like when Weidman got Anderson. No one thought it could be done. It can be done. It's going to happen. So the key for Conor is how do you handle that? Are you prepared for that? And if he has a good PR team, and he's, you know, represented by Paradigm, so I'm sure that they've maybe not talked with him about it, but absolutely talked amongst themselves about it. How do we handle this when he loses? Because it's going to happen, and we got to make sure that the building doesn't crumble, that just the window breaks. Because we can replace a window, but if the building crumbles, we're done.
Yeah. Look at Ronda Rousey. You know, there's been speculating reports that she just refuses to show her face in public because of the way that she lost. Now, I said, you know, she's going to go through a lot of emotional things to get back where she wants to do and decide what she wants to do. But it's a hard pill to swallow. Look at George. George went through his loss. You know, he needed a sports psychologist to find out exactly what it was. And there's a lot of different things that you have to do. But, yeah, it's absolutely going to happen. It's absolutely going to happen. It all depends on how he bounces back. And I'm not picking Conor right now for this particular fight. You know what I mean? To say, oh, he's just going to run through the you know, Dos Anjos.
I actually think Dos Anjos wins this fight.
You know, Dos Anjos is a formidable opponent, and he's not the same Dos Anjos from 3 or 4 years ago. He has now developed his skill set. I mean, the beating he put on Pettis, I didn't even expect that. You know, I had Pettis winning that fight, but he made Pettis look like an amateur, like this kid doesn't even belong in the same ring with me. You know, look what he did to Cerrone twice.
Yep.
You know what I mean? You got to give him his due. And I think this is going to be a very, very strong test for Conor McGregor. I really do.
You know, I will say this, because RDA has made a believer out of me. You know, even going into the fifth round with Anthony Pettis, I still thought Pettis was going to pull the fight out. You know, I could not believe what I was watching the whole time. I was thinking, all right, Anthony's going to get back on track. The thing is, RDA is just that good. So if Conor is able to come in and not even walk through RDA, just get a victory over RDA, then as far as I'm concerned, he will be the man, you know, because then he's done it. He's done it. Now he's got to defend it. But I don't know. I don't know what RDA is drinking right now, but whatever it is has him on top of the world. That guy is not only vicious, he is literally a step above everybody right now. He hits harder. He throws punches quicker. He's just, right now, whatever he's doing, he's just better.
It's the training. You have to look at the training before he went to this camp. And this is what I was trying to explain with Rhonda. She has holes in her game that you just can't make up in 8 weeks. The footwork that you need, it takes years to acquire that footwork. And not just acquire it. Get the footwork, test it out training, test it out in competition, go back, fine-tune it. You see what I mean? Rhonda was never, like I said before, a wrestler where she could acquire certain skills. She was a judoka, which means that you have to put your hands out and grab somebody, not snatch, pull. You know what I mean? The way that a wrestler would on the quick type motions, the down, up, down type motions you would need to get a fighter. You see what I mean? Single leg, double leg, that low. Most moves from judo are hip level or higher. You use your legs for the bottom part and the momentum. And so she never developed those type of skills, so it was never anything. And look, she was winning, so why should she? But when she went up against a seasoned person where the footwork was just where it was and the hand skill where it was just glaring. It was just glaring. And we all saw what happened. But Dos Anjos has said, okay, boom, this is what I need to fix, and he's fixed it. And he's in his prime right now, His hands look nice, really nice and professional, you know, polished. And he's the champion. He can, you know, if there's any doubt, there should be none. He's the champion, you know, and that does wonders for him too, what he can and can't do, you know. Between us, I think he's been biting at the bit for this particular fight since Jose lost anyway. Because as a proud Brazilian, you know, Conor has said some things that's offended a lot of Brazilians. Let's just be honest.
You know, there's one thing about when Chael was saying stuff. Everyone knew that with Chael, it's slapstick. It's tongue-in-cheek. That's his persona. That's his character. When Conor's saying it, though, Conor believes it. And that's a different story. It's a different level of insult. And absolutely, he has insulted a lot of Brazilian people, and pretty much every Brazilian fighter wants a piece of Conor because they want to be the one that, you know, exacts revenge, I guess is the best way to say it.
Or shuts his mouth, you know, and that's why they switched the venue, I believe, from Brazil to Las Vegas. You know, because at some point in time, I mean, just like soccer fans, the Brazilian fans, they love what they do, and they take their nationality very seriously. I don't think the UFC could have provided enough security for Conor McGregor at that particular time or that event. You know what I mean? Especially if he would have beat him. It's just a difficult thing. So Vegas is neutral ground any way you cut it. So
well,
definitely
yeah.
All good.
And the other thing, you can't have Conor McGregor's Irish population showing up to Brazil all drunk, not being aggressive, but just being drunk and loud and doing the things that they do, because that will end up in a significant security risk.
International incident, if we just be
exactly.
honest. International sporting incident, if we just being honest. So, you know, you have to take all that in consideration. But let's switch gears really quick, because I do want to talk about the Holly Holmes-Misha Tate fight. I think this is a good fight. You know, look, the way Rhonda lost, I don't think Rhonda deserves even though she's cleaned out the division, I don't think she deserves an immediate title fight. This wasn't a close fight. Ronda got knocked out, put to sleep. Okay? It was ugly. So why not? Look, I'm not saying that Holly can't beat her. I think Holly can beat her exactly the same way, if not by knockout, by technical knockout. Okay? Because I don't believe Ronda, within, what, 3 months, 2 months, 8 weeks, 7 weeks, has developed the skills that she needs to beat Holly Holmes. I really don't. You know? And I don't think
it's
that's going to happen.
Possible.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen in 6 months. So why see that fight again? I think she gives, Holly gives a lot of new life into division, and a lot of people, man, are probably happy that they can now still compete, i.e. Misha Tate, you know, Carmouche, a few other people that are coming into division, you know what I mean, where they've had their shots time and time again, and you know, we're looking for something, Kat Ganzano, you know what I mean? Now something new, some great fights, you know. Fans listening to me understand, I'm not against McGregor or anything like that. I want to see fights. I want to see Gregor fight, you know, Faber. I want to see him fight Edgar. You know, at 55, I want to see him fight Benson Henderson, if Benson's willing to come back to 55, you know. I want to see
Absolutely.
Superstar fights. You know what I'm saying?
And
that's what I want to see.
That's what it's all about. And, you know, the one thing that people forget about boxing and why boxing is still popular, because boxing does give fans the superstar fights that they want to see. They don't hold divisions hostage. They don't hold championship titles hostage the way that the UFC does. And so, yeah, absolutely, we want to see these fights. You, I, everyone, you know, associated with the sport wants to see these fights, because these are the fights that truly excite people, that truly make sense. And to put a division on lockdown because your superstar doesn't know what she's doing with her future is not okay, and absolutely you have to move forward. And, you know, it's funny. I mean, it's sad, but it's funny at the same time. Holly Holm basically said in an interview shortly after the fight that she didn't think Ronda Rousey would be ready anytime soon to be able to do an immediate rematch. Yes, she was all for it, but she didn't think Ronda would be ready, and this is why. And so, absolutely, it makes sense to do the Misha Tate fight, because, again, styles make fights, and Misha has the style to give Holly Holm fits. Misha has a good double leg. Misha has a chin, probably the best female chin that I have ever seen. I mean, that girl has taken some significant shots and keeps on coming. She has a granite chin. And so, yeah, this style, I mean, she absolutely could go in there and take the title from Holly Holm. This fight makes perfect sense. And putting it on the co-main of the Conor RDA card is perfect, because, again, 2.5, almost 3 months later, you have UFC 200. So, essentially, you can be setting up the main event and the co-main event of that card as well.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about it. And that's another step, too, UFC 200. You know, how would that work? And what are the fights really that they're having lined up? I noticed that they have Anderson Silva finally fighting Bisping. You know, but between us, I don't think Anderson has it anymore. I think that 11-fight deal that he signed was just a way of him retiring with Zuffa in the UFC, you know. Unless I can be wrong. His mind is back in the game and he's hungry and he's ready to do something and fight the way that he wants to. But,
well,
you know.
I kind of look at it like this. So I'm interested to see, because I'm a firm believer like you. I think Anderson's probably done. But he's had a year off, no medical stuff, because, again, the first year-long layoff he had, he was dealing with all the surgeries, dealing with all the rehab, all of that kind of stuff. Is he going to come back? Blah, blah, blah. He's had none of that for the past year. He's had nothing but time to clear his head, to train, to figure out what he truly wants to do. Does he want to be the Spider, or does he just want to be Anderson Silva? And make no mistake about it, those are two completely different guys. And if the Spider comes back, Bisping's getting his butt whooped. But if Anderson comes back, you know, that guy needs to just stay home.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt about it. You know, I think Anderson right now is fighting for what his legacy is going to be in the sport and how he's eventually going to walk away from the sport. You know, look, all the greats walked away on their own terms. Mayweather, Jordan, you name it, Gretzky. They all walked away on their own terms. They didn't walk away with such a mark on their records. You know, we go back to the Weidman fight. Chris Weidman, yes, he threw the punch, but Anderson Silva beat Anderson Silva that night. If he wasn't goofing around and he could have just slipped that punch, it would have been a different story. But Anderson just went in playing games, and he got knocked out. He paid the ultimate price for it, and he's had to live with that for the last couple years. You know what I mean? That's emotional. That's something that very few fighters can get past, you know, because it's such monumental. And I told you on this show, I was very angry at Anderson for playing around because he walked into a fight and didn't fight. And, you know, he got knocked out. Why waste the money? Why waste the time if you're going to do that? Why waste my money? Why waste my time if you're going to do that?
Yep.
Yeah.
Why insult me and everyone else associated with it, your teammates, your training partners? I don't get it. And like you said, that's something that he has to live with. And I think he's trying to get that taint out of his legacy, out of his mouth. But, you know, unfortunately, we're the ones who write his legacy, and there's nothing he can do that's ever going to change that. We're never going to forget the fact that he lost to Chris Weidman the first time because he was in there dancing around, acting foolish, doing stuff that he had done, you know, in, what, four fights leading up to it. It was nonsense, and he paid the price.
Yeah. You know,
but we're not
going
to forget that. I mean, that's actually
you can't.
In my brain.
Look,
you watched
you can't.
It happen.
You can't. And the reason why you can't is because that's what made Chris Weidman who he is today. Who he is today, regardless of his last fight. That's what made him who he is today. You know, from that one fight literally changed his life. Literally changed his life. You know, and you can't, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. There's nothing that you can do or say about it. That's history, and you got to respect that history. So it's definitely all good. Really quick, I know we have about 10 minutes, and we just get going back and forth, which is great. But do we have any other news besides this particular news that's come out that's worth talking about?
You know, there's not been a whole lot of news announced right now going on, and we're doing the radio show, so I'm not on it. The UFC has their media call for Dillashaw and Cruz, and so I'm sure there's some good tidbits coming out of that. But as far as major announcements, no, I think we won't see anything else major come out until probably next Tuesday. Look for an official announcement on Mighty Mouse and Henry Cejudo. I have been told that contracts have been sent out for that fight. Neither have been signed, but they have been sent out, and an official date has not been released, but I'm pretty sure that the UFC has one, and so we'll just have to wait and see. But I would imagine that announcement is probably going to come on Tuesday.
All right, definitely all good. Who do you think had won the fight, Condit or Lawler?
I scored last week for Condit. You know, I scored it for Condit. I did. I said going into the fifth round that Robbie Lawler needed a finish. I thought Condit was winning that fight. I thought he won the third round. I even tweeted out, very close round, could go either way. I'm giving it to Condit. I thought he won it. But, you know, what we've learned over the years, looks for something different. You have judges with an MMA background, and they look for one thing. We have judges with boxing backgrounds, and they look for one thing. And so, because there's no uniformity amongst judges, we're always going to have decisions that, you know, have us shaking our heads. I will say this, though. In the fifth round, Lawler came out and did everything he needed to do to win that fight. He hurt Condit, rocked him a couple of times. No, he didn't get the finish, but he did everything he needed to do to win that fight. I won't call robbery, but again, if I'm a judge, it was Ann New.
Well, I agree with you. And the reason why I agree with you, because if I scored that round as a point fighting round, just from my background, yes, Condit outpointed him every round. There's no doubt about it. Even the rounds where he got rocked, those punches and kicks that were landing, they were landing. You know, kick to the body, 1 point. Like I said, it's not a karate or kickboxing match where that type of pointing. It's an MMA match. So that's what I saw. But I had to go back to my remembrance and memory about the rule change that they had. Remember, they stopped that whole Stockton-style slap, touch, point-type system, and they wanted to see what? Hard shots, trembling shock, things like
significant
that. Punches and
yes.
Significant strikes that really mattered. And I have to say that throughout that entire fight, and I've watched it a few times, but I think Lawler really had the most significant strikes in the fight compared to Carlos Condit and his, you know, touch, 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 go type fighting. I mean, some of the kicks that he was throwing was just air kicks, you know, just moving his legs. Now, I don't know if that was his plan to throw confusion, but, you know, yeah, you can throw 200, 350 strikes, but if you're just kicking air, that doesn't do anything. So
nope.
I don't know. It gave Robbie fits. Because he didn't know how to come in or how to move. And, you know, whoever his striking coach is, I keep saying it, longer fighters that are moving their feet like that, you have to cut their legs off. It's just basic striking. When I say basic striking, it's basic stand-up striking. Let me rephrase that. Because somebody told me that they listen to the show when I talk about basic striking, and there's standing up striking, there's hand striking, there's kicking, there's I need to be more specific. Basic stand-up striking when you're kicking. Simple. You know what I mean?
I like it. Yep, I like it. I like it. Here's the one thing that I will say, and you and I, we talk about this all the time. To be the champ, you have to beat the champ. And yes, on my scorecard, Carlos Condit won the fight. Did he beat the champ? Did he do enough to strip Robbie Lawler of his title? And whether or not anyone wants to admit that that comes into play, absolutely it comes into play when these judges are looking at a fight and when they're thinking, all right, champion and challenger, you know, did the challenger do enough? Nope. All right, round to the champion.
Yeah, look, I definitely agree, you know. I mean, we've seen some fights recently where, you know, a challenger has come in and taken the belt the way you're supposed to take it, knockout, technical knockout, or just, you know, a rock'em sock'em type brawl, you know, the way Vasquez lost his belt. But no, he didn't. He didn't do enough, in my opinion, to beat the champ. He didn't. You know, like I said, it was a point fighting match competition as opposed to anything else. So.
And it was a hell of a fight. I mean, don't get me wrong, as I, you know, because I agree, it was a point fighting competition. Yes, had either one of those guys hit me with those shots, I probably would have gone to sleep. But I'm not an elite level fighter like they are. Yes, they were out there throwing punches, but at no time did any of them look like they were trying to kill each other. Even when Robbie dropped Carlos, and even when Carlos dropped Robbie, those weren't haymakers that landed. They were just clean shots. They were, you know, precision shots. And I don't think, honestly, I don't think either one of them was trying to kill the other one. I think they were just trying to point fight. And it was a hell of a fight, so don't get me wrong. I want to see 5 more rounds of it, to be honest.
No doubt about it. And, we could see that fight again, because I think both of them would have different strategies, you know.
Well, from what I hear, it's up to Carlos. You know, if Carlos is going to stay in the game and not retire, he's probably going to get the rematch. If he's not, or if he wants an extended period of time to make a decision, UFC is going to move on. But also look for Damian Maia to possibly get his opportunity.
Yeah, you know, I mean, but Damian Maia is a name that's been around for a while, and to me, Damian Maia is really just touch and go. You know, Damian Maia, you know, I wasn't impressed with his last fight, if I'm just being honest.
I don't know that, you know, he completely schooled Gunnar Nelson in grappling. There's no question about that. I don't know that he can do that with Robbie, because, you know, Robbie's not going to kick him. So he's not going to have that easy, you know, let's catch a leg and get a takedown. He's going to have to eat some punches to get inside and grab Robbie and then muscle him to the ground. I don't know that he can do that. I don't know that he can't do it either, but that's what that fight comes down to, whether or not Damian Maia can eat the shots to get the fight to the ground. But coming off the victory of Gunnar Nelson, he's on what I think a 4 or 5 fight win streak at 170 pounds. The word I am getting is he is getting a significant push from within the organization.
All right. Well, we have to hold it right there. Don't forget, for this or any other episodes, you can go to the Google Play Marketplace and download the free Sports Action Network mobile app. And for latest news and information, MMA news and information, you can go to the MMA Corner. That's themmacorner.com. And check out the latest issue, January 2016, coming out next week. Scrap Fight Magazine, that's scrapfightmag.com. We'll be having Brandon the Truth Vera, the cover story. So check that out at scrapfightmag.com. I want to thank you for sitting in, brother. Don't forget, everybody stay knuckled up, and we'll talk next week.
Your days at the newsstand are over. Scrap Fight Magazine brings all the world's mixed martial arts action to your computer with a click of a mouse. Read articles, interviews, and feature pieces from some of the world's most respected fight journalists, and get the lowdown on the biggest MMA events and fighters from across the globe. And because Scrap is digital, you'll have full access to the integrated audio and video segments. So subscribe now at www.scrapfightmag.com and get your scrap on.